Depends on who I'm talking to as to whether I tell them I'm a Christian. Other Christians, yeah. Muslims, I don't, because for Muslims, the word Christian has got shades of crusades, George Bush, things that I really don't identify with. And I would tell a Muslim that I follow Isa. Isa is the Arab word for Jesus. If it's one of my colleagues, I usually ask what, if they ask me, are you a Christian, I'll first of all ask what that word means to them and then have a conversation as to what my identity is within that space. But I would not just declare myself to be a Christian to somebody who I don't think understands. And it was summed up this morning. I heard Pauline Hanson on the radio saying, Australia's a Christian country and Muslims and Hindus and all those other religions aren't welcome here. And I went, oh, that's exactly the perception of Christian that I do not want to identify with.
Can you talk a bit, each of you, about how you first came to identify as Christian and some of the things that attracted you to Christian identity in the first place?
Well, I'd been raised as a Christian in the sense that I had been sent to Sunday school as a child. My father played the organ in the Methodist church. My mum had a Catholic background that she struggled with. I was baptised as a Catholic in a long white dress as a baby. So there's a bit of history there. But I had a rather unhappy childhood in the sense that, this is shades of what I was saying earlier, my parents were terrified that I'd be confident. They thought confidence was a terrible thing. And they made sure I wasn't confident. Criticism was frequent. And affirmation and expression of love was very rare. At 12, I went to boarding school, and I didn't fit in at boarding school. I was actually a very immature kid, and I hated boarding school. And by the time I was 15, I decided that life wasn't worth living, I was worthless, and it was time to quit. But being in boarding school, it was pretty hard to find a way to commit suicide. I certainly thought about it a lot, tried to work out how to do it. And then, sort of by accident, I went along to a Christian camp, mainly to escape from boarding school for a weekend. But there, out in the bush in Galston Gorge, sitting on a rock, I discovered the love of God. And everything changed for me. When I went back to school, it was difficult because I now even fitted in less. And I decided to call it quits and then went back to feeling worthless and not wanting to live anymore. So for a couple of years I fluctuated. I didn't know whether I wanted to be a Christian or not. But it reminds me of when Jesus' disciples said, are you going to desert me too? And they said, but you have the word of life, where would we go? It was the same sort of sense of, even though it was hard being different, it was meaningless not being a Christian. So that's why I chose to be a Christian.
I was spent the first nearly 15 years of my life on a farm in Queensland, and my parents never in that time go to church. I had an aunt who was a missionary who used to send us little books of Bible studies. And sometime in my early life, someone mysteriously sent me a Gospel of Luke. It was, of course, King James Version. But I actually remember reading it, which is incredible because we didn't read the Bible. But I got this gospel sent to me and I read it, and actually ever since then I've had great affection for the Gospel of Luke, and it's still my favourite, but for other reasons now. When my father died and we sold the farm, we moved into town, my mother thought we should go to church. Now, I've never been quite sure why, because I didn't go to church before and they didn't come from a church background. We went to the Presbyterian church and I went to Sunday school, and by this stage I was 15 or 16, and the Scottish minister decided it was time that I got, wasn't baptised, it was like included in the membership of the church. Didn't ask me did I want to, he just said I was the right age to be. do these classes. So we went along, my mother went along with me. We used to drive out to this one of the, there were some other people becoming members as well, and so we went to these classes, and in the fullness of time I became a member. Didn't really mean anything to me at all. I used to read the Bible, didn't really mean anything to me. I fell out quite seriously with the minister. For instance, he saw all sorts of problems with the song Lord of the Dance, so whenever I sing it now I think of John McKillop and how he hated it, and I enjoy singing it because he thought it was subversive or something. He was so totally conservative. Anyway, I then went to New Zealand to live for a while, and when I was in New Zealand I joined a Presbyterian church there, and that's where I became a Christian. They had quite an active youth group of people of my age in the early 20s. It wasn't a great conversion going up to the front sort of experience. I just sort of grew into it, and then my life did change, and I started reading the Bible and it making sense. And I always remember there was a guy at work, I was working in a bank in Auckland, and I couldn't particularly stand this guy. And we'd had an argument one day, and I remember thinking, after I became a Christian, I must go and apologise to him, and I did, and it was one of the hardest things I've ever done. And it really surprised him, but just doing that, because I thought, if I'm a Christian, I've got to show that I've changed in some way. And then I came over to Perth and joined, it was the Netherlands Methodist Church as it was then, and Way In, and let's see, there's still Tony and Lindy. And Karen Hall are all people that I knew in that church, so remember what I was like in those days.
Can you talk a bit about how your reasons for being part of Christian community or being a Christian identity have changed over the years you've been a Christian?
Well, I was terribly evangelical and conservative, and I believed in hell, and I used to tell people they'd go to hell if they didn't believe, including my mother, I'm ashamed to say now. And pretty conservative. I mean, well, the world was divided into fundamentalists, liberals, that is to say in the sense of heretics, and evangelicals, and evangelicals were the right ones, and the liberals and the heretic liberals, and the fundamentalists were the ones that were doing it wrong. So what was the other part of the question?
Something about how your beliefs have changed or how your sense of identity has changed.
I don't believe all that stuff anymore. In fact, probably if I'd looked at me as I am now, then I would have thought I was a rip-roaring liberal because, my attitude has softened a lot about what actually constitutes belief and who's going to hell and who's going to the hereafter, heaven or whatever you want to call it. I used to be very... methodical Bible reader. I'm not anymore, I'm afraid. I'm sitting here with the Bible on my knee, and I confess I hardly ever read it. I pray erratically, but one thing I hold to that has always surprised me about Christians, and that is a verse where Paul says freedom is what we have. I believe we have freedom, and it amazes me how many churches don't preach freedom. They preach you've got to do this and this and this, and you can't do this. So it's very autocratic, and yet we should be holding to freedom and tolerance rather than being autocratic and bossy and telling people if you don't obey these set rules, you won't get there, because that's really taking God's right to judgment out of God's hands and placing it in people's hands, which happens so far too often, and it's a great pity.
I actually got a similar story. When I went to university, which was after I left boarding school, I joined the Christian Union, which was, it was a Christian Evangelical Union, I think it was, but yes, it was very evangelical and quite judgmental, and if you're a Christian, you do this, that and the other thing. You can't be a Christian if you smoke, and you can't be a Christian if you're divorced, and all these sort of rules. I stayed with the group because we had cell groups, which became a close set of friends. And I used to go along to the weekly meetings because they were quite interesting. But a lot of that didn't sit comfortably with me, but I didn't know what the alternative was. We used to go to an Anglican church regularly, and that was quite evangelical. And then I went to the Solomon Islands and I sat in churches where the service was all in pidgin. That was a different way of doing things. When I came back to Australia, my first husband that I was still married to at the time had decided to ditch his Christian faith, not in a conscious way, but he just sort of drifted away and lost interest. I decided I'd go church shopping, but couldn't find anywhere where I felt comfortable. The rules and the judgmentalism really clanged for me. And then I found myself in a home church in Canberra, which the effort was to try to get back to the way Christianity was to start with, as Jesus taught it. And that was fantastic. And I learned a huge amount about what being a Christian was really about. And during that time, I was divorced, and the support of the church members really showed me what being a Christian was about. Then I came over to Perth and met Bevan, was married to Bevan, and we went to Israel a few times. And that also has had a profound effect on what I see as being Christian, because I could see how the culture of the time when the Bible was written influenced what it said, and then could suddenly see how our own Western culture influenced the way we interpreted it. And sometimes we're pretty off the beam. We don't really understand what the original intention was because we're reading it through our own cultural eyes, but I'd never been out of my own culture sufficiently to see that process happening. So that's been a pretty profound influence too. And just my understanding has changed that it's about how we live, not about following rules and regulations. And I've found a lot of the stuff we do here where we really look hard at what it says and what it really means and how we interpret it. I've also come to the conclusion that our understanding is very much limited by our human mind. And I think when I get to heaven and meet God, suddenly it'll be, oh, is that what you meant? Or I think God will be quite different to the way I envisage him. I think I envisage God in ways that are familiar, and I think God will be different, but I don't know how. I'm quite looking forward to finding that out.
Have either of you considered other religions or no religion as an option? And if not, why? And if you have, what's led you to say no to those and to choose to be here?
I have, actually. I've been curious to know what other religions are all about. Looked into it a little bit. I've had quite a bit to do with Islam and Muslims, particularly when I was teaching at the Islamic College in Kewdale. The conclusion I've come to is that religions, and that makes me wonder if Christianity is a religion at all, religions are about doing the right thing in order to get to some sort of a reward. And I know it's very strong in Islam. There's lots and lots of rules about how to behave and what to do, and it's all with an eye on getting a reward by going to paradise. And I found when I was in the school, I thought, this would do my head in. It's too much like my upbringing, where I was constantly being told that effectively, whenever I wanted anything, my mother would say, if you're a good girl. And that's basically what Islam is about. So I've sort of ditched that because I like the way being a Christian is effectively, for me, being given citizenship of a country, in this particular case, the Kingdom of God, and then, okay, we expect you to behave accordingly, but if you don't, then you won't get chucked out. We still love you. We being God, of course.
No, I haven't ever considered, and in fact religion is a word I can't abide, and maybe my reaction to if anyone said, are you religious, is the same as Trish's about being Christian. I religiously clean my teeth, you know, I'm very keen on doing that several times a day, but Christianity is a way of life, it's a relationship with Christ, so I never considered becoming a member of another faith, though I do think that reading about people of other faiths has it's been part of that process that's changed me from the hardline evangelical to the theological disaster area that I am today. I studied Gandhi and was very impressed with Gandhi, and Gandhi sort of borrowed from all faiths. And I shall be very happy to see Gandhi in the life hereafter. I'm sure there are some really good Muslim people and people from all faiths who... I take that verse of Jesus, no one comes to the Father but by me, to mean it's by my agency that people come to the Father, and that people may or may not believe in Jesus and still come to the Father. That's probably liberal crap, but you know that's what they believe. But the thought of dropping it all and not being anything, it makes sense to me to believe it. I could never understand why people find it easy to believe that crystals can determine your life, or that some old Indian who lived 200 years ago is up there looking after you, but they can't believe in God and angels and Jesus. It all sounds very fanciful. So I think a lot of people have put off a Christian faith because they think, like the thing about doing something is required of you, that you have to be good and I've never hankered after, apart from a very brief time in my life, a wild life. And I've always said, if there's nothing at the end of it, and I've lived the life I have, I wouldn't regret it. And anyway, I won't know, I'll be dead. So how will I know whether there's anything at the end of it or not? It'll be oblivion, and that will be that. But the idea of not believing anything seems quite bleak and lonely. And I find that many of the funerals that I've been to in recent years, and I'm now getting to the age where I go to a lot, have no God element in them at all, and I find them really missing something. They just have no promise of the future. They have no promise of meeting your loved ones again, and I think that's a very sad way to live, and I don't want to have that kind of attitude, I suppose. I don't want to think that there's nothing after this life.
Have there been events or moments or things that have been particularly challenging, or what has been hard about, or goes on being hard about, identifying as Christian? Well, not just identifying, but in yourself being a follower of Jesus.
Well, I suppose the fact that there are people who have, if you say that you're a Christian believer, whatever, however you want to call it, people will assume things about you. And I know that there are ways that I behave to people at times, and I know that I swear, and that would surprise and shock some people, because they'd say, I thought she said she was a Christian, but she's not behaving like a Christian. So that's one thing. I've never been persecuted. That where Paul says, if we believed all this and then, you know, there was nothing, we'd be the most unfortunate of people. He said that because they were being persecuted. I'm not being persecuted. I've never been persecuted for my faith. So in that sense, it hasn't been hard. Maybe it should have been harder, I don't know. I care a lot about justice, and one of the things that makes me angry is this story that Trish told you today. I could repeat that dozens of times over in my institution, and I think that's totally wrong. And what I fight for now is for people who haven't got the power that I have to say what I like and do what I like to whom I like, which I do. And yet I know that some of the people who are in those positions, if I said, well, actually, I'm Christian, they'd say, you don't behave like it. Things you say, you said to me, or the things that you say publicly, you know. But the other side of it is, yes, I am guilty of gossiping about people, and I know that's wrong, irrespective of how angry you get about injustice and what people do. You shouldn't talk about them behind their back, and I do that, and I know that I shouldn't do that, and I know that standards are required of us that are not required of others, and I don't just mean by our own people, I mean by God. So that's hard, yeah.
Yeah, likewise, I've never been persecuted because I'm a Christian. I guess it was mild in what I mentioned about being at school and being ostracised because I was different. But it wasn't active persecution, it was more just not feeling like I fitted in. And more the challenge is to behave in a way that is honouring to God when I'd really like to fight back and be just as nasty as the people are being nasty to me. But I think in the long run it's probably better to hold my tongue and keep my peace, because I've noticed if you fight back it just escalates anyway and they heap a bit more rubbish on you, to put it politely. I find the biggest challenge in identifying a Christian is trying to explain to people what it means, because in our society there is so much misinformation about what being a Christian means, that the conversation's really difficult.
You've talked about this a little bit, but can you sum up in some way what now holds you as a Christian or gives meaning to your sense of following Jesus in the stage of life you're at now?
For me, it is still the sense that God is there leading me. At times it's felt like he's leading me through a really scary, horrible storm. There are times when I feel that God is carrying me, but I can, when things are really tough, I can say, God, please help. The sense of God taking me through the valley of the shadow of death at times. So that sense that God is there, and there's lots of human support. Bevan is very supportive of me, but he's human. My friends are very supportive, but they're still human. But there's that sense that God is there, and I can rely on God, even though I'm not. I can't talk to God like I can to a human being, and it's a little bit more ethereal. What keeps me there is when you talk about other religions, I'm more likely to consider not being a Christian and being an agnostic like most other people, because sometimes things come up and I think, gee whiz, am I really disillusioned? Is this all just a figment of my imagination? I've actually come to the conclusion that I'm quite happily disillusioned, and I'd prefer nobody that would set me right if I am.
I think that the two things that help me make sense of the world are my faith and history. And it's interesting that even Peter has got far stronger faith than me, and it is very real to him every day. He gets more concerned about what's happening in the world than I do. I have this feeling that we will survive Donald Trump, we will survive Islamic extremism, and we do not need to fear that God will hold us. I suppose that's the thing that makes the most sense to me, that the explanation for God making the world and everything in it still makes sense, and that feeling of security that even if I don't personally survive, that that things that are worth saving will survive. And the world has seen these things before, and they'll happen again. It's not the first time. There's nothing that's happening now that's the first time, and that we shall overcome.
I'm at the end of my questions. Can I open it up to the floor? Is that all right? Yeah. Would anyone like to ask a question? We've got a little bit more time than I thought we would have, so how about if I give this one to Lee?
My voice doesn't work very well, so forgive me. You said that the love of God fell on you on the rock. Hmm. Can you tell me more, please?
Okay, we were out at a campsite. Galston Gorge is out of Sydney, and it's very bushy with great big sandstone rocks. And after one of our morning sessions where we'd been singing, had a Bible study, whatever we were doing at the time, we were waiting for lunch, and I was just sitting out on a rock. And I guess maybe the songs were going through my head, something was going through my head, and suddenly it just felt like God was sitting right there beside me with his arms around me.
So has the grace of God dropped on you?
Absolutely.
Maybe. Hello, good morning. This is really strange. My name is Daniel, which is a Hebrew name, and I think it means a messenger from God. But I'm an atheist. But I'm here today because there's so much love, and I believe in science, reason, and logic. I was raised by the Christian Brothers. That's not why. But I still believe, if you're a Christian or if you're a Muslim or you're a Jain or a Hindu or whatever, okay, that's okay. But have that respect for other people, okay? So please don't take me outside and flog me. A public hanging for Danny, you know? But I came here today, I've been trying to come for 5 weeks, and I feel really at home here. So I know. Because I feel that you're not going to judge me. It's a long road, you know, but I respect, I respect your beliefs, and I think that's what it's all about, okay? We respect each other and love. I think will save us. It's all atheists aren't. I used to sit on the fence, agnostic, but I can see the public flogging coming on. But it's nice to be here, and it's really nice to hear these things. And all I hear is love, and I hear a lot of compassion, and that's what's going to help us all. Thank you.
I'm one of the small minority of Christians who does not believe in the supernatural. I can name other notable Christians. You have to read their biographies to discover. One was Bishop, what was his name? Bishop Spong, anyhow, he was another was the Lutheran missionary. Oh dear, his name's gone. It went to Africa. Yeah, Albert Schweitzer. And you have to read the biographies to realise that they didn't believe in the supernatural. In spite of the fact that the Old Testament writers and the New Testament writers all did believe in the supernatural, there are Christians who don't, and I'm one of them. I'm also reminded of, a couple of centuries ago, of a man who, he was a minister, but he declared that he spelt God with two O's and the devil without a D.
Can I just respond to that?
Yeah.
I just want to make a comment about the supernatural. I've come to the conclusion that we have three dimensions in our life, in our physical life, but there are other dimensions to life. One of them is the spiritual dimension. In fact, I'm told there's about six dimensions. And for me, the issue is not so much supernatural, but there are other dimensions of life that are not part of the physical. And this is where our human limitations come in, that we think and see and feel in the three dimensions, the three physical dimensions. And that's what I was alluding to when I said when we get to heaven, we'll find that there's a whole lot of things that we had no idea about, and it will be quite different to what we had perceived it to be just using our human faculties. And I also think that a lot of people envisage God as a bit of a cross between Santa Claus and Casper the Friendly Ghost.
I believe in the supernatural because I've experienced the supernatural on a number of occasions, and it's very real to me when that happens. The problem with saying that is, if you don't want to believe in the supernatural, you will find a rational explanation for what I call the supernatural.
So, as evangelical, those of us brought up in the evangelical tradition, you know, the main introduction to the supernatural were clearly a lot of the Old Testament stories, but more particularly Jesus' miracles and his rising from the dead. I guess they're the big supernatural thing, aren't they? How do you handle those? How do they impact on you, I guess, and handle those stories?
Are you talking about the miracles happened in the...
Yes.
I don't have a problem with that at all. I have a problem with the Presbyterian Church that believes the age of miracles ended at the end of the writings of the Bible and won't come back till Jesus returns again. And I have no idea why that belief has been formulated, except to say that it's a way of preventing people believing that God speaks to them directly rather than through the scriptures. So all of those things, in fact, even that curious story in Luke where graves were opened and people walked into town and people recognized them, I don't know what it means, but I believe it happened.
For me, God is infinite, and that means infinite in time, in all sorts of ways. If God wants to raise someone from the dead, he's God. Who's going to stop him? And I don't think it's for me as a human being to try to limit God to the things that I as a human being can understand and do. God is not modelled on other people that I know. For me, as I say, God is infinite. God is a spirit. He has dimensions that I don't understand. But I just accept that God can do things that human beings can't. And if he's limited by the things to being able to do the things humans can do and can understand, then he's not really God at all. He's just almost an idol, a creation of human imagination.
Speaking on the supernatural side of things, I must admit it's been a long time since I've seen much of that, but I have seen it a long time ago. In a way that, you know, even though it's quite remote in my past, you know, it was there, and I know it was. So, you know, I guess I can hang on to that. But in a practical sense, I think I'm probably not alone in this room in this, that I will live my life functionally on a rational basis of the normal laws of physics. Being the, you know, it's the normal operating model of the universe. I don't think that we need to be looking out for any hint of the supernatural to reassure ourselves that God is there. I think the best that we can be for each other, the best that we can be in ourselves, which is really the same thing as the best we can be for each other, lies in working with what we know, which in science tells us a lot that we can know about now, but not be limited by the possibilities that offers, because if beyond that we know that God is there. As Tricia said, there's no limits in God. So we've always got to keep our mind open. We've always got to be prepared to be surprised, because there's still an awful lot that we don't actually know. And the more you look at science, the more you can see that there's more yet to be discovered. So I hope it doesn't need to be a one or the other in terms of how you see the world.
Can I just comment on that a bit too? An interesting experience. I learnt to fly while I lived up in the Pilbara. And I was in a little Cessna, so I was only 1,000 feet above the ground. And I was flying over a road, and there was a car coming this way, and a big truck coming that way, and I could see that the two of them were going to meet. And I looked at the road and where it was going, and the two were going to meet on a bridge. They were going to come round a corner and suddenly see each other. And I found it really interesting that I could see what was going on because I was up there, and neither of them could see what was going on because they were down there. And it struck me that that's a bit like God. That, as I say, God is working in a different dimension, and he can see things and do things that we can't. And the other thing that struck me more recently is I grew up in a time when there were no such things as computers or Wi-Fi or whatever. And I was working on my computer last night and communicating with Curtin just by typing things in. And I'm thinking, this is just unreal. If anybody had told me this 30 years ago that I could do that, I'd say you're dreaming.
Thank you. And thank you both for sharing some of your story and some of the things that are meaningful to you. We really appreciate that. And thank you, everyone, for your questions. I'll hand it back to Rose.